to speak to Professor John Tung about the border. John, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
We're getting mixed messages here. Also, indeed, some people will be lacking an understanding as to deal or no deal. Who's right when they say, for example, Boris Johnson saying that Britain can avoid borders, the Taoiseach saying that there will be checks close to the border? How do you see it?
There has to be some checks. The scale of those checks and where they take place is a matter for some debate. Yeah, the warnings couldn't have been starker. The Taoiseach basically said there's going to be quite a high level of checks at or near the border, and they will involve tariff checks, so customs checks, and they'll involve checks on the standards of products going across that border. The entirely opposite message was given by Boris Johnson yesterday, who simply said, we're not going to do any checks. The truth lies, I think, somewhere actually in the middle. There has to be a customs operation. Countries are obliged, even under WTO rules, to respect the integrity of borders. And if there is a different tariff regime, then there has to be tariff checks. Now, what could happen, of course, is that the UK says, well, you know, no tariffs on good. We're going to have our tariff regime at exactly the same level as the European Union. So why would there be a need necessarily for checks in terms of tariffs? But then you've got the problem of the UK being out of the single market, and that's really where the headaches lie, because a lot of that cross-border trade is agricultural, and there has to be checks on the standards of products going across the border. So livestock will need to be checked at or near the border. Any live product has to be checked. Other agricultural products, the standards have to be checked. Now, on day one, why should there be a great deal of a checks operation? Why would there need to be? The idea that the UK is going to try and flood the Republic with, you know, inferior or different products of different standards is fantasy. But as time goes on and there's potentially increased regulatory divergence between the EU single market and the UK, the chlorinated chicken imports from the United States is the example that's always used, then of course there will be increased checks, despite all the warnings that have come from the current Chief Constable of Northern Ireland, the Chief Constable, the head of the Guards in the Republic, and indeed the former Chief Constable, George Hamilton, who wasn't simply making a play for increased resources, because he was still issuing these warnings about the dangers of border checks, even when he knew he was leaving the police service in Northern Ireland. So it wasn't just a bid for more resources.
But do you imagine the checks to be like the checks I remember when I was young along the border? They were evidently on the border, close to the border, at the border, a mile from the border, but they were without doubt border checks. They were static, you pulled in, you were held up. I'm not talking about military checks, I'm talking here about the checks for customs, and primarily for articulated lorries going back and forward across the border, but everyone was held up behind them. Do you see those checks appearing on what is now an M1 motorway going across the border, or do you see those checks as being on the minor little by roads and country roads across the border, or will they be rolling checks where people are pulled in at random? Will they be much further south whereby you're being checked at some depot or factory? How will it look in your estimation?
No one has offered any detail on that on either side of the border. We've still got the Boris Johnson head-in-the-sand approach in which there's simply not going to be any checks. And even the Taoiseach, although he was talking about a plethora of checks in his speech yesterday, didn't indicate where, when, frequency, etc. Those are issues of detail yet to be resolved. But first thing to say is the EU will protect the integrity of its single market, and that means that the Irish government will have to carry out checks on its side of the border. Now, yeah, I don't envisage the M1. I don't envisage checks on the motorway. I think what would have to happen, and this is speculative, it's important to say that, is that there would be designated crossings for commercial vehicles, which could be subject to checks. It will be light touch, I think, initially, and will be intelligence-led rather than, you know, proactive, disruptive, highly visible, because the political sensitivities of a high-vis customs and regulatory on the border approach, I mean, potentially, politically, that is utterly, utterly disastrous. It's what both sides want to avoid. So there's still a lack of clarity. I suppose the Irish government would still as well cling to the hope that, given that there's not going to be a no-deal Brexit unless Boris Johnson wins big at an election, which on the polling evidence doesn't look likely. He may scrape a majority, but no more than that on the current polling evidence. None of this may come into play. I mean, you've got to remember that it tends to be forgotten this week that, frankly, the chances of the UK exiting without a deal from the European Union are pretty slim after the developments at Westminster this week. You know, Boris Johnson would have to win big at an election to get rid of those Conservative rebels, have sufficient majority to get a no-deal Brexit through Parliament. The only other way that the UK is going to leave without a deal, which would take care of the border arrangements, would be if the European Union itself rejects Britain's request for an extension to membership. So we may be talking hypothetically here anyway about any need for border structures. But I think, you know, in terms of the apparatus, it will be intelligence-led. A lot of the non-live products, a lot of the non-agricultural cross-border trade can be done online. You can have a customs regime that's done online. The issue, though, is the problem is the nature of much of that cross-border trade, because it doesn't lend itself to an online customs operation.
And just one final point, John. If the tangible evidence of a border is south of what we see as the geographical border, is there any security risk then?
Well, given what Republicans have always said, that they don't operate, they are under strict, you know, IRA orders not to attack forces in the south, then, you know, perhaps that can be avoided. And I think that the British government is cognizant of that, that the UK government knows the risks of introducing any sort of visible customs operation in the north. I mean, they will be security and intelligence led in that respect. So, yeah, I mean, there could be the supreme irony of the Irish government having to reinforce the partition of what it would still see, I suppose, you know, ideologically in some form, as its own country. But as a member of the European Union, you know, the EU will be looking to Ireland, the Irish government, to enforce the integrity of the single market. That's why the backstop has been in play politically now and has not budged in terms of its content for 2.5 years. It's why the backstop will remain central to any political deal, because otherwise there's no other way of dealing with the border.
John, we've one other story coming up here very shortly. You're going to be talking to some journalists about it. I know you're a professor of politics as opposed to a professor of history, but all our front pages here in Northern Ireland this morning are covering a story from BBC Spotlight, which will be shown next week. And they've unearthed footage of Martin McGuinness apparently loading a car bomb. It's footage that hasn't been seen before. It's hardly going to totally shock people that Martin McGuinness may have been involved in a bombing campaign at some time. But it's still, you know, considering the journey he was on through his life and he became a Deputy First Minister and all of that, is just a reminder of the dark era. And that you also see him in a car where he is showing a rifle to children, and he's even handing bullets to the children. So there's pretty stark imagery. And the other part of this documentary has a leading member of the British Army, an ex-army leader, describing how Ian Paisley was involved in a UVF bombing campaign right at the start of the Troubles, how he funded the UVF. Does any of that, as a professor of politics, surprise you?
Well, first of all, the footage will be startling, I'm sure. The second thing is, though, yeah, as you say, it's no surprise. Martin McGuinness was in the IRA shock. I mean, Martin McGuinness was a self-confessed member of the IRA. The risible aspect of Martin McGuinness in that respect was that when he claimed to have left the IRA in 1974, well, why and how? I mean, no one really seriously believe that. So the footage will be interesting, but the idea that it's a surprise that Martin McGuinness was a member of the IRA and involved in IRA campaigns will surprise no one. The Paisley aspect, I think, is actually slightly more interesting, because that was always a controversial aspect of Ian Paisley's career, is that the extent of his links with loyalist paramilitaries. I mean, you remember the Ulster resistance of the 1980s. Now, as soon as they started importing arms from South Africa, and was largely a botched operation anyway, but Paisley said that he immediately disowned any connection with loyalist paramilitarism. So if evidence has been unearthed that Paisley actually was in cahoots with loyalist paramilitaries, then, you know, that perhaps is the more surprising angle, given that it was always the line that he was ultimately a constitutional, at least a semi-constitutional politician, as leader of the DUP, who did not support in any shape or form paramilitary activities. So I think that is quite a revelation, whereas the McGuinness was in the IRA stuff, notwithstanding some startling footage, is perhaps of less surprise.
And I'm just looking at the headlines, and the Belfast Telegraph says, McGuinness and Paisley, new claims over their terror roles. The newsletter says, McGuinness bombed and gave bullets to kids. Paisley doesn't make the headline in the newsletter, but he does make the story. But the Irish News, they go with Paisley as the headline, saying Paisley funded UVF blast, says retired British Army chief. But maybe the best headline goes to the Daily Mirror this morning, that shows that iconic picture of Paisley and McGuinness laughing, and the headline is Chuckle Bombers.
It's a superb headline.
It is.
They won the prize of the day for the top headline. I mean, there was always this controversy about them being reinvented as statesmen of the Troubles, given their roles at the time of, you know, the Stormont and the Chuckle Brothers. And these revelations, that they are interesting in that respect. As I say, I always think that the thought of the Paisley aspect of links with loyalist paramilitaries, there were some, both biographers of him and some academics tried to investigate that, but they didn't really get that far in terms of Ian Paisley's his role. They never, you know, there was always a missing link in terms of Paisley's connections with loyalist paramilitaries.
Well, we'll be looking towards the BBC Spotlight programme on Tuesday night to see exactly what's in it, but we'll be talking to some journalists who have been viewing it at a private viewing very, very shortly. John, good speaking to you. Thanks for coming on. Thank
Pleasure.
You.